Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Discover a healthcare team that's always here for you at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Now, in the United States, Donald Trump last night made a rare live appearance on CNN in a one-hour town hall. He took questions on a range of topics and he made some rather extraordinary claims. Let's hear some of what he had to say.
Do you mind?
I would like for you to answer the question.
Okay, it's very simple to answer.
That's why I asked it.
It's very simple to... You're a nasty person, I'll tell you.
You once said that using the debt ceiling as a negotiating wedge just could not happen. You said that
sure.
When you were in the
That's
Oval Office.
I was president.
So why is it different now that you're out of office?
Because now I'm not president.
Manhattan jury found that
sure.
You sexually abused the writer E. Jean Carroll and defamed her. You've denied this. But what do you say to voters who say it disqualifies you from being president?
Well, there aren't too many of them because my poll numbers just came out and they went up. Okay.
You still have not publicly acknowledged the 2020 election results. Why should Americans put you back in the White House?
Because we did fantastically. When you look at that result and when you look at what happened during that election, unless you're a very stupid person, you see what happened.
Gosh, it's almost dystopian. It sounds like canned laughter that you'd have in a sitcom. Marion McKeown is US correspondent with the Business Post and she joins me now to talk more about this. Good morning, Marion. Thank you for joining us. Now, firstly, it's very unusual for Donald Trump to be live on CNN because he regularly denounces that organization as promoting fake news. So why did he make the appearance and how did it all pan out?
Good morning to you, Claire. Well, I think, first of all, you would probably ask, why would he not make this appearance? CNN, effectively, it seems that the media has learned nothing from 2016. Now, back then, the CNN chief, I think it was Jeff Zucker, said afterwards that they regretted just basically acting as technicians for Donald Trump for his entire election campaign, where his speeches and his rallies were run absolutely unfiltered, uninterrupted and uncut. And he was able to get billions of dollars worth of free media. Now, CNN has clearly, despite the mea culpa from Jeff Zucker, there's a new boss in town, Chris Licht, and he clearly wants ratings. And he decided to basically just hand over the station and the station's technicians, pretty much as it seemed, and etc., to Donald Trump to allow him to just literally unleash a fire hose of falsehoods. And all credit to the CNN senior journalist Caitlin Collins, who was the White House correspondent when Trump was president. She did her absolute best to fact check him and to follow up with questions. But as I said, it was like trying to fact check a fire hose. It just wasn't possible.
Now, he said a lot, but his comments on the election back in 2020, the Capitol riots, the January 6th Capitol riots, and also this latest ruling in relation to E. Jean Carroll in that civil case. Those were the things really that have sparked the biggest reaction in the last couple of hours.
Yes, but I would also add to that his comments on Ukraine, because for me that was the most concerning and the most chilling. The fact that he would not say when asked repeatedly that he would continue to support Ukraine in their battle against Russian aggression, in their battle to push Russia out of their territories, and that he just spoke in these general, I want the dying to stop, etc. If I were Putin, I would have taken great comfort from his remarks tonight. I thought it was profoundly worrying the way that he would not commit to supporting Ukraine. Deeply, deeply concerning. And then, as you say, all of the others, you know, the election lies at this stage, I sort of feel that, you know, they have been comprehensively debunked. Now, there are two types of people in America. There are those who still insist on believing Trump's version of event, notwithstanding the fact they've been debunked in dozens of court cases by the January 6th committee and in countless other places. And then there are people who just don't believe it and who didn't believe Trump, I think most of them initially in the first place. So you've got two different groups of people here. Trump was playing to his base. His base was very, very prominent in that audience because, again, this wasn't a mixed crowd. These weren't hard questions. 7 out of 9 of the questions were complete softballs. And the audience, which I found disturbing. They laughed and applauded when Trump made really crass and crude jokes about E. Jean Carroll, who, as you pointed out, a jury found Trump liable only 2 days ago of sexually abusing, and ordered him to pay her $5 million for that in defamation. Well, he appeared to defame her all over again in this town hall.
Just on that, Marion, so he made a statement after that verdict on his Truth Social, and he said, "I don't know that woman. I have never met her. Yeah. I have no idea who she is." Last night, he said, "What kind of a woman is she? She met me. We were attracted to each other. She engaged in hanky-panky with me when she just met me." Completely in direct contradiction of what he said just a day earlier.
Well, we know for a fact that when he says he never met her, he is lying. And it's the only word for it, because we have seen the photographs from 1987, almost a decade before she was sexually assaulted, of he and E. Jean Carroll at a party. He was with his wife, Ivana, his first wife, and she was with her then husband. And they, as two couples, they are chatting and clearly laughing together as a group of four. So for him to say he never met her, when there are photographs proving beyond any doubt that he did in fact meet her, just shows that, you know, these lies, they jump around the place, which is possibly why it's so hard to fact check him. Mm. Because, you know, one day, as you say, he says one thing, the other day, the next, he says something totally different, and all of it untrue. So, and demonstrably untrue. So, as I say, I think that to set up, as you a reporter, a senior reporter and a well-respected reporter like Caitlin Collins, to essentially fail by putting her in a town hall with a pro-Trump crowd and a presidential candidate and former president who every media outlet knows from experience is not going to tell the truth, is not going to be held to account, and is simply playing to his base. And the more that he disrespected her, that he called her a nasty woman, you know, his favorite term of abuse for any woman who stands up to him, the more that the audience cheered him on and seemed to love it. It was almost like, I don't know, a public spectacle from the medieval era, the stocks or something, where humiliation was applauded and cruelty was applauded. So, it was quite a depressing spectacle, I think, all in all.
Let's move on to George Santos. This is the Republican congressman.
Yes.
And he has been exposed for lying extensively about his background and his campaign finance disclosures. He was charged by federal prosecutors in New York yesterday. Now, before we hear more about him, we just want to hear a clip of him. This is George Santos after he emerged from the Long Island courthouse yesterday afternoon, and he spoke to the press. Let's hear what he had to say.
Look, this is the beginning of the ability for me to address and defend myself. We have an indictment. We have the information that the government wants to come after me on, and I'm going to comply. I've been complying throughout this entire process. I have no desire not to comply at this point. They've been gracious in there. Now I'm going to have to go and fight to defend myself. The reality is it's a witch hunt, because it makes no sense that in 4 months, 4 months, 5 months, I'm indicted.
So, Marion, that's George Santos. Tell us a little bit about how we got to this point.
Well, we got to this point because George Santos was elected in 2020 as a congressman for New York. Shortly after he was elected, we discovered that he had lied about just about everything to do with his life. He lied about the colleges and the schools he attended. He lied about working for Citigroup and Goldman Sachs. He claimed his grandparents were Holocaust survivors when they were not. They were Brazilian small farmers, I believe. He claimed that his mother was working as a financial executive in the Twin Towers when the towers were attacked on 9/11, and that she was in the tower at the time. His mother worked as a cook and was in Brazil at the time. And there was a shocking incident where he agreed to do a GoFundMe for a military veteran who had a number of mental problems, whose dog had a tumor that needed to be operated on. He raised the money for the dog and then he kept the money. He also lied about things that were just so easily checked. Like, he claimed he had four employees who were killed in the Pulse nightclub shooting in Florida, after to raise money for his campaign, he set up two different companies. Now, I think we spoke about this quite a while ago, Claire, and how patently transparent. The thing is, you know, he's a very bad liar. He's terrible at it. You wonder why he does it with such enthusiasm, given his lack of skill in the art of lying. And he set up these companies. And what he was effectively trying to do was he was taking in money for his campaign, but then he wasn't spending the money on the campaign. And he was putting it through another company, which was housed in the same apartment in Florida, and then spending it on stuff for himself, that, you know, gadgets and things. And but then when the COVID epidemic started, he was actually employed and he was making money and he continued to be employed, but he claimed that he had been let go, and he claimed about $24,000 worth of COVID payments falsely. So this is another separate charge. So you have money laundering, you have campaign finance irregularities, you have lying, false claims on a congressional declaration form, you have fraud from the public purse in the COVID case. And, you know, he is potentially looking at up to 20 years in prison for this. That would be the maximum. I don't think he's going to get that. But of course, he came out and you know, true disciple of Donald Trump's, immediately started saying it was a witch hunt and he would fight to defend himself, and you know, talking about Hunter Biden. And I think that the sort of the gall of this, he is a fabulist, you know, there's no doubt. And he just, he seems to be quite shameless. Now, it is embarrassing for the Republicans that on the same day you have George Santos, you know, being taken into custody and 13 charges brought against him. And you had Donald Trump with a civil jury in Manhattan finding that he was liable for sexually abusing E. Jean Carroll and for defaming her. And you know, and then this is their former and likely prospective presidential candidate. And I think for the Republicans, probably the shrinking group of Republicans left, the Mitt Romneys, etc., who Liz Cheney, who has brought out a NAD excoriating Donald Trump. But, you know, this is almost a small echo chamber that seems to have shrunken to about maybe 10 or 15% of the original Republican Party. And now really the battle is between Trump, who has a lock on about 40%, and the other candidates who decide to run against him.
Now, the other issue I wanted to just talk to you about briefly, Marion, is this Title 42. This ends today. Yep. It's a Trump-era immigration policy. So what happens now? What will be the impact of it expiring?
Well, it's going to be a humanitarian catastrophe, and I, you know, I don't wish to overstate it. You have Title 42 was a public health regulation. Donald Trump used it initially correctly at the border when he had banned all people from entering America, you know, any non-Americans. But then after that ended and the flight restrictions ended, he started using it as a tool to prevent asylum seekers from coming in over the border. And Biden kept it in place initially, but the Biden administration, you know, immigration here, I cannot tell you the mess that it is. There's no will to fix it in Congress. And Biden is correct in saying that he can't do anything on this, really, that it's up to Congress to act. But Biden, at the same time, President Biden, knew 2 years ago that Title 42 was going to expire sooner or later. And they really have put nothing in place in the interim. Now, I spoke with a White House press spokesperson earlier today, and I was told that they had been refused the $5 billion they sought by Congress, by the Republican Congress. And I would say, yes, that is true. But they also knew when Nancy Pelosi was the House Speaker and the Democrats controlled Congress that they were going to need funds. They were going to need to put things in place. They were going to need to put an infrastructure in place to deal with this overflow. None of that has been done. It's been left to the local charities. It's been left to the Catholic Church. It's been left to a hodgepodge of people on the border of organizations to try and help these people who have been suffering terribly and who've been living in appalling conditions in Mexico on the other side and who are now going to try to come into America and seek asylum there. The whole thing is a mess, and it did not have to be that bad. And it's the fault of both the Biden administration and the Republicans as well.
When even the president, the current president, is saying it's going to be chaotic for a little while, you know that there is trouble coming. Marion, thank you so much once again for your time. That's Marion McKeown there from The Business Post.
Text
text 51551. Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.